podcast.
FreeMusicEd.org.
Yeah, that's Gannon.
Hi.
Yeah, and I'm Steven. And we're going to be talking today about instrument fundamentals and listening. These are pretty wide topics, but we thought they kind of related to this first series we're doing that's just kind of a blanket, I would like to play an instrument, what do I do now topic. So
stick it on your face and go.
That's right. You got to start playing it. That's apparently that's part of the thing.
Best advice ever.
Right. Thank you for the best advice ever.
The podcast's over. That's it. Pack it up. Go home.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Goodbye. Go practice right now. Why are you listening to podcast when you could be practicing? Unless you're listening to a podcast while practicing.
There we go.
That's pretty cool.
I'm multi-talented. Right,
whoever
there.
You are, you're my favorite. That being said, what we were going to talk about last week, and we did talk about last week, was the different types of ways you can learn to play an instrument, that being going to classes or taking a private lesson instructor. This week, we're going to talk a bit about what you're going to be doing as you start learning to play an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
It's nearly the same for all instruments, the first few steps that you're going to be taking. No matter what you're going to be playing, you're going to do some of the same basic things to start out. And so what I wrote down that probably the first thing you're going to learn to do on any instrument is learning how to hold it and how you're supposed to hold your body while you play that instrument, holding the instrument and your posture.
You know, it's one of those things that is real widely overlooked because we just think, oh, well, you just do what the people on TV do and that's it. You know, they just make it look so easy and not awkward or uncomfortable at all. But you are learning to take something that is completely foreign to your body, and your end goal is to use it as a tool as if it is an extension of your body, you know? And you're not very comfortable with it yet. And so there are a lot of tendencies to develop bad habits.
Oh yeah.
By just not holding it correctly, not using it correctly, not sitting in the right way. In order to use it efficiently, you know?
There's actually a great deal of variation in the way some instruments are played because people learned incorrect postures for those instruments. Some examples I would be is I've seen lots of weird ways to hold the violin among fiddle players.
Really?
People that, you know, you see violinist and they're holding it against their chin, using their chin guard and everything. Then you see some country and western players that are holding it on their hip. Have you ever seen this?
A hip shot violinist.
They hold it on their hip and play down here. I've seen this several times.
Really?
You know, people that have developed a great deal of technique. And perhaps that's a proper playing posture that I've never heard of, but I think that that's something weird that's happened.
I would say that's weird.
I see a variety of different ways to hold the guitar. I see a great number of different... an example would be clarinet positions. If you look and you watch, like, Benny Goodman... he'll have his clarinet way out in front of him, almost in a trumpet type of position.
Yeah, but, straight out ahead.
A lot of that has to do with when they were learning and how they were learning, and their showmanship changed up the way this posture looked, and it's not a very efficient clarinet posture. It can actually hurt you a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the weird thing, and the hardest thing I have with students is that there are a number of professional players who have inefficient postures, and... they play very well and they've become very famous, but there's actually something they're doing that could be better.
Mm-hmm. And even at that, you know, what works? Wow, this is hard to say.
You're about to contradict everything we just said.
Yeah, I think so. Because I was going to say what works for one person doesn't always work for the other. But yet we're sitting here trying to say that there's a generalized rule of how you're supposed to do things.
Well, and there is.
But there is, you know, especially for starting out as a beginner, you've got to have some sort of format to fit into, some sort of here is how you do this, here is how you hold this, because you don't know what feels right and what doesn't.
Oh, that's true, and you can do some very weird things. An example is this. I very much try to force my beginner students into not moving with the music. Because generally, my beginner students, as they're moving, they'll move right with the beat. So they'll use their entire body as a metronome, and it makes them actually very unstable on their instrument because they create a great deal of wobble. Now, you can see a great number of professional musicians that do move whenever they play. You see some that do and some that don't. But I can look all day at some phenomenal musicians that tend to sway with the music as they play. But as a beginner, you may just be creating a great deal of instability, whereas these people have played for a long time and stability is no longer necessarily an issue for them.
You want a great side story?
A great side story. I'll even take an okay side story game.
Oh, okay. This summer I was in Europe.
Europe?
Touring around with a jazz band. And
jazz?
I was in the hotel.
Hotel? Sorry.
Thank you for that. You need more reverb in your voice,
right?
To do that, though.
Hotel.
So I was watching TV in Austria. And there was their version of American Idol, basically.
Ooh.
Was playing. And there was this guy who was going to sing, and, you know, they were doing the bio ahead of time, showing him practicing and being with his family, and they're talking about all this stuff, but it's all in, you know, German or whatever they speak over there in Austria. I guess it was all German, yeah. And so I didn't know what was going on. And then it finally gets to stage where he's doing his song, and it's like this outdoor patio setting. And there's, but it's like on a beach, and there's an ocean and some houses in the background. Real pretty scenery. And he starts singing the 80s song Sweet Dreams, but down real low. Sweet dreams are made of these. Lives am I to disagree? And it was really weird and awful. And then I heard this squealy little clarinet playing behind him. I'm going, what is that? And the camera pans over, and there's this guy who looks nothing less than Fabio. Looks just like Fabio, and he's got his shirt open, and there's muscles rippling in the wind, and there's this air blowing on him, and his hair is blowing back, and he's playing the E-flat clarinet.
The E-flat clarinet.
Yes.
For those of you who do not know what the E-flat clarinet is, consider yourself fortunate.
Yes, and the whole arrangement of this song was kind of polka-y.
Because
there was an accordion, and they're unka 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 unka, and this clarinet player was just dancing all over the stage with his clarinet. It was absolutely amazing the way that he could move with that thing. But yes, that going to say, I saw a version of Sweet Dreams, an octave too low, as a polka with an E flat clarinet lead.
Dancing around
so like a madman.
If you don't want these things to happen, you need to have the correct posture when you play your instrument. It's the moral of this story.
Bring the circle back around there.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so holding the instrument posture is going to be one of the first things you do, and I would encourage you to very seriously try to do your best at these type of things whenever you start out. Some people won't, and it will cost them. Here's the next thing that's going to happen, and this may have even happened first.
One thing I want to add.
Oh, add. Okay, yes. Go ahead.
When it comes to holding the instrument in posture, the one thing that you've got to try and avoid and run away from is tension.
Tension. Oh, yes, agreed.
You can't force good technique. Good technique is something that comes over time.
Right.
It won't happen immediately, and if you try and force it by creating tension and holding your fingers in the right place and making it happen like that, that's even worse. You know, you got to work for those good postures and that good hand position and all that kind of stuff. But you've got to understand that you're not going to have it just immediately. You're not just going to go, oh, okay, I'm going to have good hand position now. It's something that you strive for without creating too much tension. Tension is a nightmare.
Well, that's true. In any part of your body, in the way that your back and your shoulders and the way you're holding the instrument, you don't want tension. And what he's saying about hand position and tension is huge. I teach woodwinds are the primary thing I teach, and that is the number one problem is hand position and tension. People squeeze the instrument, and if you're squeezing, then it stands to reason that you will not be able to move your fingers quickly because you're applying a great deal of force to them. So if you start out and your posture and hand position are bad, and you're squeezing and you're crunched up and your hands are in an unnatural position, as they tend to do when you pick up an instrument, they go into the weirdest formations. I can't explain it scientifically, but people's hands do weird things whenever they pick up an instrument. If you're doing all of these things, it will cost you. And I've had two types of students. I've had the types of students that I say, hey, you're squeezing the instrument, and they fix it by the next week. And I've had the other type of student where I say you're squeezing the instrument and they're never able to fix it and they're never able to grow past that. And it becomes a huge barrier in their playing. So not doing those things early on will help you in the end.
Yeah, that's number one thing about hand positions and posture and stuff like that.
Certainly.
Lack of tension. You got to be able to relax.
Well, and if we're going to talk specifically about hand position too, you need to make sure that whatever instrument you're playing, that you're following the rule of maximum slothness. That is that you move your fingers no further away from the instrument than you absolutely have to. The closer your fingers stay to the instrument, the faster and more fluid your technique is going to be as you get better.
Mm-hmm.
People will generally, as they're showing their students different fingerings, lift their fingers way off of the instrument in order to make it very clear which fingers are down and which fingers are up. And if the student imitates this type of technique, then their fingers will be far too off of the instrument and it will slow them down substantially.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an exception on any instrument that I can come up with.
You're not going to come up with one.
There's not one. That's a really good general rule, except for trombone.
Yeah, well, trombone.
Because it doesn't matter.
Even with trombone, you're keeping your hand as close as you can to it, which is on the instrument. You don't take your hand off whenever you go from position to position.
Well, and there actually is right hand technique.
True.
The way that you hold the slide. It's kind of a different topic right there, but you don't want to be just, you know, muscle grip it with your whole fist. It just takes a little bit.
No more, no less.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So the next things that you're going to be learning on your instruments, some of these, well, no, they're both going to be coming at this time, is tuning and tone production, and it depends on the instrument. So most stringed instruments, one of the first things you're going to learn to do is tune that instrument, because you cannot produce any of the right tones without the proper tuning.
True.
And while there are a variety of different tunings, you'll be learning a standard tuning first, most likely. And whatever that instrument is, usually guitars and violins, many times the instructors will be teaching you to use either a tuning fork or now, more commonly, an electronic tuner.
A tuning fork?
A tuning fork.
Who uses a tuning fork anymore?
You know, old people.
It's like 1930 again?
if you have several and some tuning knives, you've got a dinner set. But
that's awful.
What everybody's doing now is downloading a chromatic tuner on their phones. I use ClearTune. Is that the name of the tuner?
The app, yeah.
Yeah, the app.
I use ClearTune.
Yeah, there's some free tuners online. I haven't found a good one yet. I keep looking. If you find a good free tuner on the internet, let me know. I've got some lousy ones, and I think I have that linked on my website to the lousy one, because I can't find a better one yet.
Yeah, I love ClearTune. It's one of the best I've ever used, and it's only, what, $1.99?
Yeah, and buying a tuner used to cost hundreds of dollars, mm-hmm. and then within my lifetime, you could buy one for $25. Now you can download an app for $2 to go on your phone that works as good or better than any of those.
I think it works better than the $20, $30 tuners.
I think so, too.
I think it's way more accurate.
If you have a good smartphone, and ClearTune's the one I'm recommending, there's some other good ones.
A lot of people use the Peterson.
Okay.
There's a Peterson one that's real popular. I think it's harder to read. I think it's kind of overkill.
There's one that a lot of schools are using that has like happy faces and things on it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, it has happy face, sad face, and all that
stuff.
Right.
It's a happy face when you're in tune and a sad face when you're out of tune. And I cannot for the life of me remember the name of this.
I wouldn't know.
If I do, I'll stick it at the end of the podcast at some point.
We'll stick it.
Right. There you go. Okay, so tuning and tone production. Now, certain instruments, most wind instruments, you're actually not going to deal a lot with tuning until you deal with tone production, because tone production is a huge entry barrier on brass instruments and on woodwind instruments, because mm-hmm. it takes a lot of work to form your mouth in just the right way and to put your air in just the right direction to produce a good tone on an instrument that is a wind instrument. Again, I talked about this before, but playing guitar or playing piano, if you pluck the strings, or if you push down the keys of these different types of instruments, it's going to sound pretty much like the instrument. But the first time people pick up a clarinet, it kind of sounds like torture. And so,
kind of.
It does sound like torture.
It is.
It's wonderful teaching a clarinet class of 23 clarinets how to produce a tone.
You know, one time I judged the junior high all-region clarinet room.
It was beautiful, right?
Oh, never again.
It's me. I get to do it several times a year.
It's
very exciting. Pretty soon, whenever you have to do terrible things in your life, you learn to look on the bright side. So the bright side is that after those things are over, I can be so happy that I'm alive and not in that room anymore. But now, I'm not dissing the clarinet. I love the clarinet, and a well-played clarinet is wonderful. Beginning clarinet is a little bit tortureful.
I, on the other hand, am dissing the clarinet.
Oh, he's not entirely serious.
Entirely,
yeah. At any rate, so those are the next things that happen. Tuning and tone production, those type of things would be next. Then now after that, you're producing a tone, or you've got your instrument in tune, you're doing both. The next thing you're going to be learning is how to change and produce different notes. So there's always a starting note. It's different for almost every instrument what your first note will be, depending on how that relates to both the difficulty of producing that note and how you hold the instrument. The next thing you're going to do is start producing and adding other notes to that, no matter what instrument it is. Or sometimes on chording instruments such as guitars and banjos and mandolins, instead of learning single notes, some teachers will push you to start learning chords right away.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel that learning individual notes first is a better idea because there's a lot less to focus on. But not everybody agrees with me. A lot of people will do either one of those things.
Well, you know, a lot of people like to dive into chords just because that gets you into playing music faster. Into playing songs. And I'd really like to have Dylan, my brother, on here sometime. Because,
oh, he'd be good.
He teaches guitar lessons over in Fort Worth, and he's got like 30 or 40 students right now. And one of his big mantras is, if we do not learn or play a song in the lesson, then I failed.
Oh, wow.
You have to play music in every single lesson because that's one of the things that keeps students engaged.
Is I've learned a new song.
Is it I can play this song. I'm learning this new song. We've played through the song. That was so much fun. I'm playing music. You know, I'm doing this. I'm not just playing, you know, exercises and stuff like that.
Certainly.
And whenever he's just going to people, he just drives around to people's houses and teach lessons.
Oh, he's a, what am I trying to say? Door-to-door.
A door-to-door guitar teacher. Yes, yeah, exactly.
He makes house calls.
Mm-hmm. And, well, he does pretty well doing it, too. It's surprising how well it works. He's up in the Fort Worth, Dallas area.
That's a great deal, too. If you can get a private lesson instructor to come to your house, that's a special thing. You can't get that in a lot of places.
That's why he does it, because not many people do. But, you know, he has to be able to hold their attention, and he has to be able to keep them motivated from week to week to week. And a big part of that is the fact that they can sit down and play a song with the radio. They learn a new song that week, you know.
That's very interesting. And the reason that doing that with chords instead of notes is easier is because most all, I mean, 90% of the songs on the radio are three chord songs. Almost all melodies can be harmonized with just three basic chords.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gets people to doing that quicker. Now, you're not playing the song. You're playing an accompaniment to that song, which is a little different. When you're playing individual notes, you'd be playing the actual melody to the song.
Mm-hmm.
And guitarists, actually, I really like the way they do this. And this is leeching onto something we're going to do in a minute. So we need to move on for just a second. And then I want to talk more about this idea of learning to play songs versus learning fundamentals of your instrument and such.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, there's one other thing that fits into this first category of the first things you learn when you play an instrument. One would be the very important point of instrument care, which we talked about a little bit on the last podcast, that all instruments require some level of maintenance and care. You should be learning this as you're learning these first things, but if something's going to get tossed out and forgotten about, that's going to be it,
mm-hmm.
is we won't talk about instrument care, and then you'll wind up caring for your instrument the wrong way, and then...
Or just not.
Yep, and the world comes to an end.
Yeah, and then your instrument stops working.
The Mayans from last year were actually predicting you not taking care of your instrument.
That was the end of the world right there.
Yeah. So instrument care is an important part of this too. Again, can't go into a lot of details on this.
Oh, there's just every instrument has its own details. The important part is learn what the basic maintenance on your instrument is. Learn how to do it right. Learn what not to do wrong.
Ooh. What not to do wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of... Okay. That's kind of a weird
double
statement.
Double negativity.
Well, not to do, not wrong.
I think that got worse.
Yeah,
that
did.
Okay.
And talk, you know, if you don't have a teacher, talk to somebody who is a professional or at least proficient on that instrument.
Or an instrument repairman.
Or an instrument repairman. You might have one in your local area. And I'm sure he would be glad to talk to you about... what it would take just to keep your instrument going and some of the basic things that they see that people don't do on a regular basis.
It's true. A good instrument repairman is worth his weight in something valuable.
Lead
or gold or something. Peanut butter.
Lead,
right?
We deal with enough lead that we're made mostly of lead.
Well, that's good. That's good. Beware of your musical instrument repairman. He is probably poisonous.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so that being said, there's one other thing that I like as an instrument fundamental, but I hardly know of anyone doing it, and that is covering a little bit of the history of your musical instrument.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I think this is important is because whatever instrument you're playing may have taken on many different uses in the time that it's existed, and it'll help you know where to look for music for that instrument. An example would be this. I play the clarinet, and the clarinet has a long and diverse history. At one point, the clarinet was the most popular instrument to be learning to play in America. It was the big pop instrument the saxophone was. If you look into the 1920s and 30s and Dixieland jazz and swing, clarinet was king. The most famous musicians in the world were clarinet players. Sometimes I dream in 1920s and 30s, because it was just that was the time of the clarinet. Before then, it became so powerful during the Romantic era of classical music that it got a great deal of favoritism too. And so whenever I look for music that really features the clarinet, I can look into those time periods and be really excited. And so I think that was an important part of learning to play my instrument. But I didn't learn it early on, like I think you probably should.
Yeah, the 20s were a dark time.
A dark time, that's right.
We wised up and went to trumpet and saxophone.
Yeah, something like that happened. Right now, it's all about the guitar. Today is the day to be playing the guitar and the bass and the drums. They are the centerpiece of our musical ensembles in a way they never were before.
Actually, I think the most important instrument in our current culture is the auto-tune.
The auto-tune, yes, the auto-tune. If you can move those dials, or the GarageBand button.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, it's more and more. During a long period of time, the piano was the most important instrument to be playing, and most music written was for piano, and everybody learned to play the piano. That was just, if you learned to play an instrument, it was piano, and then maybe you'd learn to play something else later. Anyway, so I think instrument history can be really valuable. That being said, we started talking earlier about people learning to play songs versus learning different exercises and things, and, you know, is there one better than the other, or is there a balancing issue? And that being said, I think it also leads into whether or not you need to be able to learn to read sheet music. So that's just a huge open field for you to go jump in, Gannon.
Oh, boy. It depends on how you ask the question. Do you have to learn how to read sheet music? No. I'll be that guy who answers his own questions.
Okay.
Do you have to learn to read sheet music? No.
Well, but wait, Gannon. What if you want to play in an orchestra?
Do you need to learn to read sheet music? Yeah, probably. Yeah. Although if you want to play in an orchestra, yes, you have to learn to read sheet music because that's what everybody does.
That's how you get your parts.
That's how you get your parts. That is how the ensemble functions as a unified unit, which is that a redundant statement, unified unit?
Actually, I think what you're saying right now makes a lot of sense. When determining necessity of reading sheet music, I think it is really dependent on the type of ensemble that you're performing in.
Yeah, totally.
As far as necessity of reading sheet music. So give me some examples of some ensembles that do not require people to be able to read sheet music.
Rock bands, rock music, country and western music, that whole scene right there.
And in those situations, they're not reading sheet music, but a lot of them are able to read what's called lead sheets, which often have the chords and the melody, or the lyrics at least, written above them. Some of them can read what's called Nashville notation, which is it's a lead sheet, but it just is in a general writing so that it could be played in any key.
Yeah, it's a numbering system.
So they learn some notation, but it's not the same as reading sheet music.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
And it's a lot easier.
That's true. There are certain jazz groups, Dixieland jazz groups, that do not have to read sheet music. There are certain polka groups that would not need to read sheet music.
Mm-hmm.
They would still need some type of musical reference point to discuss. So they would say, oh, we're all going to play this in the key of D. And they'd know the names of the chords they were playing, but they might not necessarily have sheet music in front of them that they were performing with.
And one of the things about playing in those kind of groups, I've played in several country and rock groups as a bass player. And no, you don't have the sheet music there, but there's a lot of preparation that goes into it ahead of time. You have to get all the recordings of the song. You got to learn how the song goes. And you basically have to memorize your entire set.
Yeah.
You have a 3-hour set. You've got to have it down, Pat. You've got to know it because you don't have anything in front of you. And so there's a lot of preparation that goes into that. But then like jazz gigs. Like I have a jazz gig tomorrow night for New Year's. And I don't know these guys. I know one of the guys. And I think I might know a second one. But I pretty much don't know the group. We're just going to walk in the door, shake hands, meet each other, throw a book on the stand, and start playing. And that's one thing I love about the jazz world and being around people who are proficient readers, is that we can just walk in the door and play, and amazing things happen right off the bat. There's not this huge learning curve of how does this song go, how does this song go. We have something right in front of us telling us the basic foundation of here's how the song goes, and then we can do with it what we want, you know, in the moment.
Well, and that's some of that has to do with the complexity of the music that you're playing. It is possible for a country band to get together with four or five people and their list of chords, and everybody knows the song, and they can work it out pretty quick. It's not really possible for 88-member orchestra, all of which who have different parts, to get together, and they all kind of know the song and perform something that's cohesive.
Yeah.
So different things demand different types of handling in that respect. So the other side of that is my brother, who plays guitar and likes to play in rock bands and stuff, for a long time he was convinced that if he learned to read sheet music, that it would somehow inhibit him as a musician.
Really?
That learning to read sheet music would hold him back, that having to think about things would prevent him from being a good musician. And this was really interesting to me, because I see where he's coming from, because whenever you don't read sheet music and you play your instrument well, you kind of have to go back in time and start from scratch again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to feel very inadequate.
Well, I think a lot of people see it also as sheet music can be an inhibitor in that it doesn't allow you to play freely.
Well,
you're stuck to exactly what is on the page, and that's it. And I always think in college back to piano majors. Piano majors, man, they can play the crud out of some of the sheet music, and they practice and practice and get so good at this Beethoven and Chopin and Rachmaninoff and stuff like that. Man, it's just incredible. But then you put a lead sheet in front of him that doesn't have the notes written out for him and just say, all right, go. And they freak out. They have no idea what to do.
Well, and that's a neat point, because I see this with people who've gone through middle school and high school band programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they become very good readers, and then you take away all the sheet music and you say, okay, now play a song. And they can't play a song because they were never trained to just play their instrument. They were trained to follow the notes on the page. And they never experimented outside of that. They never noodled. They never attempted to improvise or to play back things that they heard. And because those things are not conducive to large groups. If you've got 50 people, you can't have a lesson where you go say, okay, well, everybody play something, you know, and anyone be able to hear themselves even.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, what you need is you need both, in my opinion. To be the best musician you can be, you need to be able to improvise. You need to be able to play your instrument freely. And you need to be able to be a good sheet music reader to do everything that you could possibly do on your instrument. Here's the other thing about reading sheet music that is a huge advantage. Not only can you walk into a gig where you've never met any of the musicians and play a wonderful gig together because you all know how to read your parts, but you can also take, and whenever you're reading method books and when you're reading things like this, you are able to learn techniques and things you can't learn without this fundamental knowledge of them explaining it. If you know how to read sheet music and you want to learn a riff, well, you can look at the riff and play it, mm-hmm. versus listening to it and working it out piece by piece in something that might take a great deal longer. There's also the communication aspect. You know what I'm talking about? If you know how to read sheet music, it's easier for you to communicate with other people about music.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been in situations where I've been working with people who didn't know how to read sheet music, and they had a difficult time describing where we were going to start rehearsing, what they really wanted. They didn't have the vocabulary because they didn't understand the, you know, the mathematics behind the music.
And you know, that's exactly what it is a vocabulary. It's an exact parallel, and I would say this is the perfect metaphor. It's just being able to speak English and being able to read English, and being able to read English out loud. You know, you can be a very eloquent speaker without being able to read anything. And that doesn't, and not being able to read doesn't make you any less of a speaker, but it doesn't make you, it does make you less of a communicator.
It's true, because you're unable to fulfill half of your communication, where you would be reading words, now you can't. So you lose out on all those opportunities that mm-hmm. the written word gives you, which is a great deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the same respect, if you were able to read wonderfully, but you weren't able to just go out and have a conversation with somebody, it wouldn't make you an unintelligent person, but it would make it very difficult for you to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's it.
That was a good parallel. Okay, I think we've taken quite enough of these kind people's time. We've got so many things coming up. We've got some interviews with some of our favorite musicians, college professors, and things coming up. Some more interesting topics. This is going to kind of close out this if you've never played an instrument, here's where you start series. We're going to be referring to these a lot on our website, these first few. But we're going to get into some other topics pretty quickly, so I want you to be excited about that.
Yeah, some more advanced topics, some more in-depth, maybe.
Yes, absolutely. A little more specific, a little more nerdy. We're going to get real music nerdy on you now.
I'm all about music nerdiness.
That's right.
You couldn't tell by the sound of my voice.
Right, or the fact that we're doing a music education podcast. So if you want to find out more or ask us any questions, go to freemusiced.org.
Send an email.
Send an email. Go to the forum and post something. Someone ought to do that.
Yeah.
And we'll answer you and your questions. And, you know, guys, have a really great week. And
yeah.
We'll see you next week. And keep practicing.
Keep practicing.
Thank you. Oh, hey, yeah, nearly forgot. That app that I totally forgot the name of, that app is Tonal Energy. That's TONAL Energy. There's a link on this podcast post. All right, you guys take care. Bye.